President Claudia Sheinbaum confirmed the move on Tuesday, saying the decision was not made in response to U.S. pressure.
It is a sovereign decision, and Pemex makes its choice. And also, as we have said, Mexico's decision to sell or give oil to Cuba for humanitarian reasons has to do with a sovereign decision that has been in place for many years. It is not recent.
The Justice Department says they'll finish reviewing and publishing files on the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein soon, but did not provide a specific timeline. The DOJ has released over 100,000 pages so far, less than 1% of the Epstein files. And South Carolina's reported nearly 800 measles cases, the largest outbreak in the United States since the disease was declared eliminated nearly two decades ago. The state's health department said at least 18 people have been hospitalized for complications. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has upended immunization policies in the U.S. as he and his allies have spread misinformation about vaccines. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As outrage grows across the United States over the Trump administration's deadly immigration crackdown in Minnesota, we begin today's show looking at the recruiting practices of ICE, that's Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The Washington Post recently reported on an internal strategy document shared among immigration officials that details plans to spend $100 million over a one-year period to recruit gun rights supporters and military enthusiasts through online influencers and geo-targeted ads. The article in the Post is headlined, ICE Plans $100 Million Wartime Recruitment Push Targeting Gun Shows Military Fans for Hires. We're joined now from Tampa, Florida, by one of the reporters who broke the story. Drew Harwell is a technology reporter with The Washington Post. Drew, welcome to Democracy Now! Explain exactly what you found, who exactly is being targeted with this massive influx of money.
Yeah, thank you, Amy. This is called a Surge Hiring Marketing Strategy document. It goes into extraordinary detail into the methods they want to use to reach more than, 14,000 new employees for ICE to basically double the deportation strike force that they have on the street. How they want to reach those people is through social media marketing, real world marketing, right? Billboards and bus stops, kind of the classic traditional styles of advertising, but also through these unusually precise techniques that would include geo-targeting. So they would basically create a fence around gun shows, UFC fights, NASCAR races, military bases to really try to identify who are these people who would be interested in becoming new soldiers for their fight against immigration.
If you can talk about the language and imagery of these recruitment ads, most of them seem to rely on, to say the least, jingoistic and xenophobic wartime rhetoric and symbolism, where joining ICE is seen as performing a, quote, sacred duty of, quote, defending the homeland and expelling foreign invaders because America needs you. And then there's the overt references to white supremacist messaging less than 2 days after ICE agent Jonathan Ross fatally shot Renee Good in Minneapolis. Multiple social media accounts run by the Department of Homeland Security posted a recruitment ad for ICE captioned, "We'll have."
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 8:03 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Jacqueline Keeler. Go ahead, Jackie.
Oh. Hi, this is Jacqueline Keeler, and you're listening to KBOO, and this is Wednesday Talk Radio, and I invite you to definitely call in to the studio. And so today we're talking about democracy, data, and federal power. Many of you may have heard I'm sure all of you have heard of the latest murder by a Minneapolis citizen just this past weekend. It's been pretty shocking, and it's relentless, basically. And so it's been quite a lot to deal with. And I last hosted a show here on KBOO on Thursday, and it just seems like so long ago now, because we were talking about, of course, Greenland and Trump's attempts to break NATO, and now that seems like it was a long time ago, he's already switched up what we're all having to contend with, and more traumatizing sort of things, and it's just been pretty shocking. So I apologize about not being able to talk more about that, and but what we're going to talk about today is one of the outcomes of that tragic event, which is over the weekend, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi sent a letter to Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, and basically demanding access to detailed voter registration data. And I guess the sense was, and I'm not sure this was actually in the letter, but that this would be part of negotiating a withdrawal of federal immigration enforcement agents from Minneapolis. And the response from Minnesota officials was that it was a ransom note, a coercive demand that asserts federal power within state elections. And it's also alarmed a lot of legal and voting rights experts as well. And that's what's been going on right now. And I think, hi, Ty, did you get some of the audio working?
I can play them through my phone.
Okay, all right. Let me see here. I wonder if I can play this one. Let me give it a try really fast. And so this is the response from the Minnesota Secretary of State, Steve Simon, and a little overview of what Bondi was requesting. Why don't you go ahead and try to play it on your end first. All right, well then I'll go ahead and try to play it. Can you play it, Ty?
No. I mean, I can play it over my mic, but you can do the same where you're at.
Okay, well, let me give it a try and tell me how it sounds.
All right. It's not working.
That's not working?
Let me try something.
Okay, that's a different clip, but
okay.
The one with Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon.
Yeah, the 2 minute, 2 minute and 30 second one, and a 1 minute and 54 second one.
It looks like it's 2 minute and 30 seconds.
So, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi, she issued a letter to Governor Tim Walz over the weekend with three requests. So she wants Minnesota to share all of Minnesota's records on Medicaid and food programs, and this is including SNAP data. She also has asked for sanctuary policies to be repealed, saying that all detention facilities in your state should cooperate fully with ICE. And she wants the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division to get access to the state's voter rolls to, quote, confirm that Minnesota's voter registration practices comply with federal law. So Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon releasing a statement saying the answer to Attorney General Pam Bondi's request is no. Her letter is an outrageous attempt to coerce Minnesota into giving the federal government private data on millions of U.S. citizens in violation of state and federal law. This comes after repeated and failed attempts by the DOJ to pressure my office into providing the same data. So joining us now to discuss this, the Secretary of State himself, Steve Simon. So as we begin to talk about the three potential solutions that U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi mentions in this letter, she specifically calls them common sense solutions. What do you have to say about that comment? And also, can you talk about the significance and what she is asking to have access to at this point?
Yeah, well, this request is bizarre and disturbing. Bizarre because it has nothing to do with the facts on the ground. It has nothing to do with security, public safety, immigration, ICE, anything. So it's puzzling, and I would say bizarre that this is being tacked on as one of the sort of implied conditions to giving us our peace and security back. But it's also disturbing because the Attorney General well knows, and I think a lot of your viewers know, that we are right now in active litigation on this very question. It is in court, which is where it belongs. We have a different view on the law. They have requested this very same data, which is personal, private data on millions of Minnesotans, driver's license numbers, social security numbers, etc. And we are one of 32 states that have said, no, we're not going to give that to you because the law, both state and federal law, does not give them the right to obtain this data. So we're battling it out in court. That's what we do. We don't battle it out in the streets. We battle it out in a court of law. And she knows that. So that's why I say it's both bizarre and disturbing.
So, yeah, that was from Secretary of State Simon from Minnesota. And his response to Bondi's demand that he turn over data. So just hours after after the another death in Minnesota by ICE, another murder, and she demanded that that they allow this little. She demanded three things. The third item that we're focusing on is that they allow the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice to access voter rolls to confirm that Minnesota's voter registration practices comply with federal law as authorized by the Civil Rights Act of 1960. Right? This is pretty ironic because she is, of course, then using the Civil Rights Act and the Civil Rights Department division to basically go after civil rights. turning it on its head. And so we've seen this been going on for years now with all the different legal cases going on claiming, you know, that they, white people claiming that they have been facing reverse discrimination. And now this has been brought to the actual federal power, federal divisions, which are asserting this and using, twisting the Civil Rights Act of 1960 against the people who actually fought for it. So and so, of course, the state of Minnesota has refused to share this before, as has Oregon. And I think we're getting a little into that the fact that Oregon actually won a case recently that a federal judge, this was reported in the AP on January 26th, 2 days ago, that the federal judge dismissed the Justice Department's lawsuit seeking Oregon's voter rolls. And the AP writes that in a hearing, U.S. District Judge Mustafa Kusabhai said he would dismiss the suit and issue a final written opinion in the coming days. The updated docket for the case showed that Oregon's move to dismiss the case was granted. And Attorney General Dan Rayfield here in Oregon is quoted as saying, the court dismissed this case because the federal government never met the legal standard to get these records in the first place. And basically, Oregonians deserve to know that voting laws can't be used as a backdoor to grab their personal information. And I think we have also audio of a longer segment sort of examining why they want these things. Did you play that audio? It's with
explaining that letter on Fox. I do not understand these people. We sent Governor Walz a very strong letter today. We had been working on this letter. We got it out saying that he better support President Trump. He better support the men and women in law enforcement, because if he doesn't, we are. And that's what we're doing right now.
Were there any consequences in this letter?
Well, we'll see. This is fluid. Let's see how Governor Walz responds.
This is not the first time the Trump administration has attempted to get their hands on state voter rolls. Last year, the DOJ began trying to build the largest set of national voter roll data ever from all 50 states. 11 of those states complied. Minnesota repeatedly declined to turn over their rolls, citing a state law preventing the transfer of private information.
But Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar seems to think Bondi's renewed focus on voter rolls is indicative of something bigger. Omar posted on X, quote, ICE will leave Minnesota if you hand over your voter rolls. Tells you everything you need to know. This was never about immigration or fraud. It was always about rigging elections. It's important to note that in no place in the letter did Bondi explicitly promise ICE would leave Minnesota or stop operations if Walz complied with the letter, but many Democrats echoed Omar's concern. Arizona Senator Ruben Gallego writing in his own post, that's a shakedown. They're using fear to get their hands on voter information. In America, you don't get to strong arm your way into elections. And Senator Chris Murphy doubled down. Check it out.
This has never been about public safety. Minneapolis is a much less safe place today because ICE is there. This is likely about trying to rig and steal the election. Donald Trump is wildly unpopular. He's not committed to democracy. And he knows the only way that his movement is to retain power, the only way that his corporate allies retain power, his billionaire allies retain power this November is for Trump to steal the election.
So that was some responses that that Bondi's letter got from other Democratic leaders. So definitely call in. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jacqueline Keeler. The number here in the studio is 503-231-8187. And so we're discussing the response from the Trump administration to the recent the recent events in Minneapolis, and of course, it's not an investigation, right, of this killing on the streets of Minneapolis, and but it's actually a pivot to try to gain access to all of our data, our private data. And the question is, why is this so? Why are they doing this? And it looks like it's tied to the elections, right? And so it's I'd like to hear your point of view on this and what you think, and how does that affect us here in Oregon? And of course, the goal is to as you heard. Some of the different congresspeople say is to basically get to overturn the midterms, to try to prevent people from voting by giving access to their voting data and being able to challenge them and to even remove them from and particularly focusing on blue states like Oregon, like Minnesota, and it does seem like also blue states where there is a white majority. Which has rejected Trump, and obviously that is probably something he can't comprehend. After all, he's always calling for better, nice immigrants like from Scandinavia, and of course Minnesota is, well known as a place where a lot of people from that region of the world came to both Minnesota and the Dakotas, which of course are the homelands of my father's people, the Dakota and Lakota people. And and of course you have the Minnesota Vikings as well. And so he probably doesn't understand why he's been rejected by that group. What has been really amazing to watch and has been a huge is the way in which the community of Minneapolis has stood together, even under really extreme situations. I think that, it was really difficult when ICE was operating here in Portland, but this is at just a totally another level of what's going on in Minneapolis. And I thought I'd read a little bit about we of course know and are really been paying attention to the murders of Alex Preddy and Renee Good, gunned down on the streets of Minneapolis in order to prevent them from witnessing what ICE was doing. That's all they were doing, was acting as witnesses and even having their actions, their illegal actions observed. They will actually kill American citizens, and the Trump administration will allow it. So Jerrica Fountain, she's a Native woman in Minnesota, and she's really does some great graphics that she's been sharing about the ICE invasion of her community. And she recently posted the other day, basically describing what it's like to live in Minneapolis right now. And this was on Facebook. She wrote, "To make it very clear, ICE is not in Minnesota or Minneapolis for an immigration crackdown, nor here to simply deport undocumented immigrants who commit crimes. That is a narrative that has been largely in the media, and it's just not true. They are here to terrorize our streets in order to create bargaining chips to manipulate leaders, although there are multiple layers to this. Minnesota residents woke up to a war declared overnight on them by the president, eventually leading to Minneapolis becoming under occupation. ICE no longer functions as an immigration agency, despite media claims that it is targeting undocumented people who committed crimes. ICE operates above the law, with immunity, and outside the Constitution, acting as a secret police force used to intimidate and suppress the public on behalf of the administration. Gas bombs, checkpoints, and state violence against U.S.-born citizens have become routine, creating widespread fear across race and class. Streets are filled with government-funded forces resembling guerrilla groups, highly funded groups, I should say. That's my interjection there. And once focused on border crime, ICE is now used for political coercion and retaliation, pressuring leaders to comply by harming residents. While the United States is experiencing a recession, a large percentage of our taxes goes to funding the secret police. The administration is capitalizing on a false narrative about widespread fraud in the state brought on by immigrants. They are pushing the idea that Minnesota has a major problem with immigrants committing crime and claiming they are intervening to help. In reality, there is no widespread fraud by immigrants here, and they know it. Another reason is that Minnesota is a sanctuary state." That was another one of the things that Bondi wanted them to give up in order to de-escalate the situation there. Another reason is that Minnesota is a sanctuary state that aims to protect and welcome immigrants and has become a target because of that stance. And the administration hates our governor, Tim Walz. So they are enacting revenge and payback on him by harming us Minnesotans. But it's just a completely, this is me interjecting here again, it's amazing that we are at this place right now, and the world is watching and is equally horrified. And they exploit the fact that Minnesotans historically mobilize against injustice, using that response strategically to their advantage. It'll take protests and demonstrations that are peaceful and characterize them through propaganda as violent and having paid agitators. Yep, that's exactly what's going on. That require the secret police force to intervene. It's a self-feeding system where they come in to cause chaos by randomly hurting people as justification to continue this. We are trapped in a cycle of where resisting harm or death, this triggering the Insurrection Act, while not resisting means continued violence or death. The ongoing violence is used to justify even more force, creating a situation where people are harmed either way. So, and then she goes on to say, why are they specifically targeting Minnesota and especially specifically Minneapolis? Because we govern here in a community-centered, community-driven, community-led type of structure. Minneapolis and Minnesota have functioning welfare states, and a large focus here is grassroots efforts. Because it's a part of the United States, that community-focused government is actually working here. Here, people are actually able to live free lives and even have opportunities for assistance. They are specifically trying to prove that that allowing everyone to be equal in society just doesn't work. They want to destroy this and create an image of chaos where things, in fact, have been functioning. So she goes on to talk about what they're trying to do to dismantle, not just to basically defame the entire community in order to commit violence, in order to gain some political agenda, which would also include basically derailing the midterms and any accountability they might have from the voters. So please do feel free to call in. Once again, the number here is 503-231-8187. And so what is your reaction to federal officials trying to, tying ICE operations to demands for voter roll data? How do you feel about that? And for now, it seems like here in Oregon, our data is safe. I wonder what will happen if it is appealed up to the Supreme Court. Do you see this as a threat to election security or state autonomy? And it's always funny how Republicans are so for state rights until they actually, it's about civil rights. And genuine civil rights. So we do have a caller. Hi, Brad. You are on KBOO.
Hello, Jacqueline. I thought of you this past week because of the ICE, I guess, in Minnesota grabbed some Ogallala Sioux. And yes. I was like, one of the guys said, well, where are you going to deport us to? So I got a big kick out of that. I said, yeah, they don't even, there's no place they could deport them to except where they're at. And
yeah,
also,
I know.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, also, there's an article also about civil rights and stuff. Everybody keeps focusing on the federal level and how stuff has to be done at the federal level. Well, Steve Platick wrote a really good article, an essay in the New York Times about how state and local officials can hold these folks accountable for violating our First, Second, Fourth Amendment rights as codified within our state laws and city ordinances. And so I think it would be nice if people would remind our state officials that they do have power and they need to use it.
Yeah, what was the name of the title of the article?
Oh, let me find it here. It's by Steve Platick in the New York Times, and it's called This May Be the Only Path to Accountability for the Minneapolis Shootings. It's in New York Times yesterday, I think.
Okay, all right, I will look that up and take a look at that. Yeah, that's really, well, thank you for bringing it up. I'll review it and we can discuss it a bit on the show today too. So I'll take a look at that. Thank you so much for calling in, Brad. We have another caller, Jeff, on the line. Hey, Jeff.
Good morning, Jacqueline.
Good morning.
Hope you can hear me. There is a call, widespread call for a general strike on Friday. And this simply means you will do nothing. You will not work, you will not go to school, and you will spend absolutely no money anywhere, even the local coffee shop and bakery, which, of course, is my predilection. But a general strike is being called for on Friday, and I thought you and your listeners should know, and I thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you. Yes. So there is a call, I see, for a general strike. It looks on Friday, January 30th. I think that's a fantastic idea. And so that would be, it's actually coming from, I'm reading, a Somali Student Association at the University of Minnesota. And so this is after the continued murder of Minneapolis citizens and by ICE. And so it's an expansion of last week's general strike, and which actually did culminate in the closure of hundreds of Minnesota businesses, and thousands of protesters were in downtown Minneapolis despite sub-zero temperatures. I should note that is amazing that Minnesotans are out there protesting in the streets when it is, I think, negative 35 with wind chill factor out there, that's Fahrenheit. So it's quite cold out there. If you want to have a funny sort of thing, you can go to TikTok and see folks doing get ready with me videos, getting ready to go and protest in Minneapolis and all the layers of clothing they wear. So it's being called for next Friday on January 30th. It says ICE out, justice for Alex Freddy, justice for Renee Good, nationwide shutdown, January 30th, 2026. And no work, no school, no shopping. And there will also be a march in downtown Minneapolis that afternoon. And so this is, they say, this ICE terror in our communities in Minneapolis must end. We will not back down. To stop the terror and get ICE out, we are calling for an expanded strike this Friday, January 30th. So that is what's going on there. And yeah, I just also wanted to address Brad discussing, you know, where would you deport, you know, Ogallala Sioux tribal members? And I should know, I guess I brought this up before, but, you know, Minnesota, there may be Minnesota nice now, but the history was quite bloody, and they actually did deport Dakota people from the state. That's why there are just a couple of Dakota reservations there with just very small populations. Most of the Dakota and people were deported to South and North Dakota and Nebraska. And that's where their reservations are now. And it's ironic because now they don't really have any say or standing in Minnesota because they were removed or deported, I guess you could say. And so including my dad tribe, the Yankton's, they're Yankton Dakota Sioux, and they had villages in Minnesota, and including they were the keepers of the Pipestone Quarry, which is a sacred site there, sort of in Minnesota, South Dakota, on the border there, and it's where they would quarry the pipestone that was used for our sacred chalupa, the pipes that we would pray with, or we still pray with, and so that's where that would be. And my father's band were the keepers of the pipestone, and it was a place where people, the tribes, were not allowed to fight. It was basically the Switzerland of Lakota territory. And so, but yeah, that is a history that is actually fundamental to Minnesota. And, but yeah, I did cover earlier how for, the Ogallala Sioux tribe had reported that, four of their tribal members had been taken in Minneapolis, and other Dakota Sioux tribes have also reported this as well. The Simpson Wahpeton recently had a tribal member who was arrested just earlier this week, a few days ago, and who has since been released. And so it's, and then of course, I had told you before about how a Mittawakaton Dakota woman, her whole house was surrounded by armed ICE agents with guns in her windows. When a DoorDash driver was fleeing ICE and took refuge in her home, and she had a two-year-old, the Dakota woman had a two-year-old in her home. So, and of course, recently there's been a lot of reporting, and I've also shared this in my social media about a Navajo man in Phoenix, in a community near Phoenix called Peoria, that basically was held by ICE for several hours and was hogtied and zip tied on the ground, and he had all his identification. You know, he had his ID, he had his certificate of Indian blood, which is a federal document, and also his tribal ID as well. And they didn't want a birth certificate, and they didn't want to look at any of it. They taunted him while he was on the ground zip tied, saying that they were going to go after his kids next. So, you know, going after Native people in their in their homeland and threatening them, this is what ICE is doing, as well as all the other horrific things they are doing. But we have another caller on line. Hi, Tom. You are on KBOO. Hello?
Reminding the state officials they have authority. I think people should be aware that there's a legislative session coming up, and there are...
Hey, Tom, could you say that again? A legislative session coming up?
We lost him.
Okay, all right. Please, Tom, please do call back, and I would like to hear more about that. So, hi, Camden, you are the line.
Democracy Now! Was cut off for about three quarters of it this morning, I think, or so.
Oh, no. What happened?
Oh, you didn't hear? Oh, it couldn't be my radio. I kept tuning to other stations.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, well, this has happened before. Huh? Am I coming through okay?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I'm getting an echo here, and this happens also. Other callers have mentioned this before. So one thing, this only happens to KABU, okay? And I don't know if there's any way, this never happened before all this computerized stuff took over, but is there any way to go back the way you used to broadcast? It never happened back in the 90s. All right, that's one question. Then the other part is that since that, I like your show and everything, but couldn't you preempt or exempt or whatever, you just back it up? So, because you could, it gets cut off in the middle, basically. We're missing half of that. All right,
what's
that's one thing. Well, you weren't aware of it? There was
no
signal here. Okay. It couldn't just be my radio. I tuned up to any other station, and it was coming through fine.
Do you have anything to say about the topic?
I'm getting this horrible echo. I'm just going to keep talking. All right. I suggested on Cecil's show that people could... I want to start with this. So basically, Trump is holding an ice axe over St. Paul, Minnesota, you know, Minneapolis, and then saying, oh, well, if you just do this, I promise I'll take it away. Okay. It's just bully tactics. I want to throw up some more strategy for us. I suggested on Cecil's show that people should bring ice melt to these protests and throw it down and go, ice melt. Ice melt. The other thing is, there's many forms of ice. So one is called dry ice. Dry ice burns if you touch it. But we could like to dry ice.
I think that's the grandest. So how do you feel about how they're trying to attack voting rights or voting, getting hold of voting data? How do you feel about that?
Well, sure, but yeah, hey, let's just vote in the street right now and not wait. There's no time for waiting.
Good point. Very good point. Well, thank you.
We could sculpt ice. There's people that do ice sculptures, but right? It's like sand sculptures. They're only good for a day, right? And there's also shaved ice. We could shave ice.
Okay, well, and that was a great idea. We're going to get comments back, but I want to hear more about what you were talking about with the legislative thing. Hi, Tom. You are on TV.
Okay. As I was previously gotten on, there is a legislative session that starts next week in which the legislatures are, there's legislation that's proposed to strengthen their position and use their authority even more. And if people want to know more, I would contact the office of State Representative Willie Chopson, House District 46. And he was a public defender and a teacher that's now in the legislature. And one of those, I only know, can only sort of lay out one. One is to keep the National Guard only operating within their mission. And I haven't went back and looked and read their mission, but I think the activities that they've been calling people out for are outside that mission of the National Guard. So contact the office of Willie Chopson, find out what the state is doing in this next legislative session to strengthen their hand against the regime. So that's my input. So to think that the state isn't aware, they are. There are multiple state reps are out on the front lines along with Attorney General Dan Rayfield to try to attack back. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that's great. I think those are some of the different things that states can do. I tried to also look up the what's going on at the state level, I think. And I did find an article in the New York Times. I'm not sure it's the one that Jeff mentioned earlier, but I found an article in the New York Times, as Minneapolis rages, legislators move to restrict ICE in their state. So there are efforts to curtail federal law enforcement tactics, and they began last year. And it says, but with the deaths of Alex Pretty and Renee Good, Democratic lawmakers are pushing harder. So I hope this is the article that he was referring to. And he's describing different bills that have been introduced at the state level. So interesting tactics. I know that there is an attempt to try to, here in the city of Portland, to basically cite and fine the owner of the building that's being rented to ICE here for basically the the tear gas and stuff that's being sprayed in the streets that's affecting the rest of the community. They would have to pay something for that. And so hopefully that will go through. But yeah, this is where in Delaware, they're actually similar to what they filed in New York last spring. They would prevent commercial airlines from receiving jet fuel tax exemptions if they transport people detained by ICE without warrants and due process. So there's some other different things. I'm not sure that's the article that he was talking about, but they are reporting on different sort of strategies that are going on around that. So as I mentioned earlier, there is this, these lawsuits going on. Federal officials have been suing states to gain access to detailed voter data under civil rights statutes. And, of course, here in Oregon, the judge recently dismissed such an attempt, citing lack of legal basis to compel unredacted personal information, and was basically thrown out this month. And I guess another issue, kind of a thing on all this, so we're facing, once again, a threat to the midterms, that Trump still has this, his administration are still very pointedly focused on this. And as I read from the experiences of a local Native woman in Minneapolis, that basically the question is, his name is Jericho Fountain. Is this all thought out? I mean, was this their goal from the beginning, right, to create terror and violence and even murder citizens of blue states where Trump had lost in order to get these roles, these voter roles and private information, and to extract them and then to be able to use them to try to overturn the election, right? Is this the goal? And you can call in and tell me what you think. The number here is 503-231-8187. And is this really what's at stake? And is this a thought out thing? I mean, is this not just a pivot, right? Because right now Trump is, very, very unpopular, as the Secretary of State Simon of Minnesota said. And he always is looking at his polling. He's claiming the polling is false, but this is not a popular move. And another element of it that's unpopular, which is kind of strange, is that because Prentice was carrying a gun, and he was legally carrying a gun, this is being used by the Trump administration to basically say that he kind of brought it on himself, that he deserved to be killed. Let's play that audio, the one about Trump saying that. Hi.
Mr. Freddy, your deputy chief of staff said that. You don't think so?
So that being said, you know, you can't have guns. You can't walk in with guns.
What about the Second Amendment?
So, yeah, so that was Trump being interviewed on the tarmac. That's why all that noise is with reporters calling out questions. And basically, he stated that Alex Priddy, who was the Minneapolis protester, observer, who was shot and killed by federal immigration agents, he was lawfully carrying a firearm when he was killed. And the video shows that he was disarmed before he was shot. So, which really undermines the story that they were really afraid and they had to shoot him 10 times because of that. And just horrific. And it's just hard to deal with all this stuff coming at us at once. And it's just never ending with this administration. And President Trump, you just heard him say that Freddie should not have been carrying a gun, even though he was legally armed. And this has actually prompted a backlash from gun rights groups that are arguing legal gunship ownership includes presence at protest sites. So basically, that you are allowed to protest while you are armed if you have it legally. He had the right to carry the gun, and we've seen a really unusual groups or organizations speaking out against the administration, including the Gun Owners of America and shockingly the National Association for Gun Rights or the NRA, they have basically blasted this response from Trump, and they're saying it undercuts Second Amendment, because the administration is trying to justify lethal force against lawful gun carriers. So not only have they gone after the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment, but now they're going after, the Second Amendment, which is something that never thought we'd see, right? I mean, of course, Trump is not he's an opportunist more than he is a sort of a believer in anything. That is kind of a shocking thing that just came out. Actually, even FBI Director Kash Patel is quoted saying, you cannot bring a firearm to a protest. And of course, Noam said, I don't know of any peaceful protester that shows up with a gun and ammunition rather than a sign, right? And this is completely, I know that all of you are very aware of all the pardons that Trump gave to insurrectionists, January 6th insurrectionists at the Capitol, they are usually defending people who are doing this kind of stuff, but now that it's undercutting their right to violate the law, suddenly it's a problem. I think gun rights, let's look at some of the things that they're saying. The Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus said, there is no prohibition on a permit holder carrying a firearm loaded with multiple magazines at a protest or rally in Minnesota. The National Association for Gun Rights responded to Patel's statement in a social media post saying, carrying an extra magazine implies nothing. Claiming otherwise sets a dangerous precedent for Second Amendment rights and creates an easy backdoor argument for magazine bans and similar legislation. I really doubt that the administration will ever do that, because this is just an opportunistic grab to try to provide cover for the illegal actions of U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents, right? I know we like to call them ICE. Maybe that's cooler than they deserve, right? These are actual people who normally are just dealing with customs issues, and now they're in the streets killing people. And the National Rifle Association also issued a statement responding to a social media post by Bill Asaley, the U.S. Attorney for the Central District of California, who wrote, if you approach law enforcement with a gun, there is a high likelihood that they will be legally justified in shooting you. Don't do it. So this is a U.S. attorney for the Central District of California. California is, of course, a blue state, but, that Central Valley area is very Republican, Fresno and those areas. And I think, ironically, Staley also received campaign money from the NRA, the NRA was not happy with what he had to say. So the NRA basically posted on X, this sentiment from the first assistant U.S. attorney for the Central District of California is dangerous and wrong. Responsible public voices should be awaiting a full investigation, not making generalizations and demonizing law-abiding citizens. So it's a very strange moment when we are actually agreeing with the NRA, and the NRA is actually calling for an investigation. And I don't know how long this will last, obviously, but it's an interesting intersection. And, of course, there have been pictures coming out where I mean, what you see in Minneapolis happening is that, you know, these groups that were founded, you know, in the 60s to protect marginalized and vulnerable communities, as I mentioned earlier in a previous episode, shows about AIMED, American Indian Movement, being on the streets again in Minneapolis, St. Paul, doing what they originally were founded to do, is protect those urban Native communities there in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and from harassment from law enforcement. And I guess the Black Panthers are also there now again, protecting the communities. And there have even been pictures of members marching armed and in the streets, which, of course, was what led to gun restrictions in California, was when Governor Reagan at the time saw that the Black Panther groups were armed. That's when suddenly he, a Republican, got behind gun restrictions. So we have another caller. Hi, Santiago. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, Jacqueline. How are you?
Good, good. Well, it's been tough. I mean, this week has been awful. So.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. World's crazy. I feel that, you basically touched on a lot of the things that I was saying, but I would take it a step further. You know, the fact that, like, the ability to be able to restrict the Second Amendment, I mean, like many other things that the U.S. has done, has been allowed to happen in marginalized communities. You know what I mean? So, like, they want to make the comparison of what Trump is doing right now to the Gestapo in Nazi Germany, which, I mean, is understandable. It's a very visceral memory, but a lot of white folks, they forget that, like, the Nazis learned from America, you know, and the fact that, like, we had our own Gestapo and our own Hitlers here. We just don't call them Hitler. We call them the founding fathers. I mean, Andrew Jackson, somebody that Trump very much looks up to, was like the blueprint for being, like, first of all, a loser, because he was born into wealth, and then he gambled it and drank it all away, and then made it all back murdering indigenous people for the expansion of the U.S. government, you know? But people don't refer to him as a Hitler because we have so much reverence for these racists that found the country. For me, it makes it seem as if what Trump is doing is alien when it's really not. And, and the fact that, like, you know, when Germany was, you know, what Germany did to its Jewish and, Slavic and disabled queer trans folks, they perfected that in Africa, in the Congo and in Namibia. And they called it Lebensraum in Africa, too. You know, so all they did is they perfected it in places where the general populace of their liberal democracy was either apathetic or just, like, indifferent to what was happening. They perfected it there so they could turn the switch here. And that's exactly what's happened, because America has allowed Israel to proliferate, because it's allowed its other projects in Latin America to proliferate. And to be able to do those things to Black and brown people in other countries, all they had to do was flip the switch here. And it's the same thing with the Second Amendment. You know, when Black and brown folks try to exercise our Second Amendment, we're scary. We're evil. We're going to do to the white people what the white people did to us. And we're literally just protecting our neighborhoods. And I think the worst part is it's the people who are supposed to be on our side, the liberals and progressives. They don't see it. You know, they don't see it. I mean, liberals and progressives have almost been lockstep with Republicans at every place that is meaningful. I mean, what I see from a lot of liberals is, like, it's just like, you know, if it was done quieter and not out in the open, it would be fine. You know, I feel a lot of that sort of energy from liberals. And while I'm happy to finally see, I mean, it took white people being murdered in the same way that cops murder Black and brown folks for white folks to wake up. And at this late in the game, I mean, it feels disingenuous. I mean, I'm not saying it's everybody, but I'm just saying, like, you know, just in general, it feels disingenuous in a lot of ways. And, and there's almost kind of like this, like, now it's happening to us. And it's like, well, you know, welcome to the beginning of the race that indigenous people have been running for 500 years. Like, it's just, you know, if these white folks who really care about what's happening actually let Black and brown folks lead the resistance, I'll have a little bit more to feel about that. But at the end of the day, like so many of these liberals are trying to preserve the system that created this problem in the first place, while trying to say we can't allow this to happen again, but it continues to happen. You know, this isn't the first, this is like the third or fourth time America has gone rogue and decided to deport the illegals. You know, it's just crazy that we're here. And, you know, and I hear a lot of white people like, I can't believe this is happening. It's like, read a history book, talk to somebody who isn't, who isn't white in your general vicinity. And ask, I have a coworker who's just like, I just can't believe this is happening. He's like, actually, this has happened multiple times. It's got to the point where, like, you know, every time he says something, I'm like, I start to open my mouth. He's like, yeah, I know. First time for white people. Yeah. It's like, yeah, don't act surprised. Yeah, you know this has happened.
Well, yeah, I mean, even when it has happened to white people, like in labor union, standoffs and fights that have occurred over the, since the 1800s, it's not taught to them. They don't remember it, you know? And so there's a collective amnesia about the history. And I totally agree. I think and for folks who continue to be marginalized, it's not something you forget. It's something that you remember because it's happened.
Yeah,
it's a defining part of your
family.
Like
a lot of it didn't happen in our immediate memory. It's ancestral memory. Like we see, like it's visceral. Like we feel it in our bones when this stuff happens.
I've written about before. I did this piece about Thanksgiving that was widely published, and it was one of the things I really remember is first being told that I'm Native American, and of course part of that is being told about, you know, how we were dispossessed violently by America, Jimmy. And I was a kindergartner when I can really recall understanding it with my mom and telling me what happened. And I'm just feeling so outraged. I mean, I was just a little five-year-old, but I was really angry at that point. And of course, as a kid, you know, hearing family stories about Dakota people and what happened during what they used to call the Dakota Sioux Uprising. In the 1860s, and what my family experienced seeing Yankton's having to, Yankton's taking in Santee Dakota people who had been driven out of Minnesota, right? And what we were threatened with annihilation as well for doing so by the American Army, the U.S. Army, but we were able to find a way to save them, Jimmy, our relatives. And so it's these memories of violence and then seeing it happen again, you know, all the time. I mean, it's not something new. I saw this one YouTuber, he calls himself Emotional Support European. And yesterday he released a video about a letter written by himself and Brands United, a working group within the Omas Gegen Rechts. Sorry, I'm 1/32nd German, but I cannot speak German. Grannies against the far right movement in Germany. And he says these are women who grew up in post-war Germany or experienced World War II themselves. And they wrote an open letter, which you can find at grands-united.org. Okay, so anyway, they write to the U.S., people in the USA, we have an urgent message. We are observing that democracy is in great danger and that freedom so dear to Americans are under serious threat. And then they say, we know this because we've been through this before. And we are a German civil society network of independent organizations, individuals. Our network includes a working group of Grandmothers Against the Right, founded in Vienna in 2017. They have also been active in Germany since 2018. The Grandmothers campaign against right-wing populism and for democracy. They are considered one of the most influential civil society women's initiative in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. The majority of members are women who grew up in Germany in the post-war period. Some of them experienced World War II firsthand. And so they have joined forces to oppose right-wing extremist ideologies and fascism. And they write, given Germany's history, we see this as our shared duty, especially towards our children and grandchildren. We know from experience how fascism can destroy a country, its freedom, and its society. And it is our responsibility to leave our descendants and future generations a world where there is no place for dictatorship, hatred, and fear. I actually heard a data point recently that over 70% of countries in the world right now are under some form of dictatorship. And so democracy really is online and across the world. And World War II devastated Europe and cost millions of lives. Promises of greatness and superiority, fascism led our nation into a war of annihilation against our neighbors. These promises misled people into following a monstrous and inhumane ideology of, quote, life unworthy of life. It has taken generations to try to heal the wounds, and they remain. This is why, after the Second World War, Germany swore an oath upon which our Constitution is based. Never again will we allow ourselves to be ruled by fascism. Without the participation of the United States, the Allies would not have succeeded in liberating Germany from the terror of National Socialism. For this, we remain deeply grateful. Without your country, Germany would not have a democracy today. And then they say this unites our two countries, and this is why we are appealing to you so urgently today to warn all Americans your democracy is in danger. I'm running out of time now, but that's sort of what they're, definitely check that out, Grand United Against Fascism in Germany. And but once again, democracy doesn't collapse all at once. It erodes, and especially when this form of violent power is normalized. And this use of this grab for voter data is just more grab for power and leverage against the rest of us. And yeah, and right now our rights have become conditional based on the whims of the narcissist in chief. And now enforcement of law has become, is replacing consent. I mean, this law that whatever serves their needs at this moment. So, I hope that we can continue to push back and continue this conversation. I will be hosting the call-in show again tomorrow morning on Thursday, and we'll talk more about this then. Thank you for calling in. This is KBOO, and I'm Jacqueline Keeler.